The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit and Kevin Negandhi with you. Reminding you, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, review. Feedback is always welcome. And my feedback here today as we tape this on a Monday, what a football weekend for the state of Indiana. Tom Allen and his Hoosiers, they shut down Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. And, of course, the game of the year did not disappoint with Notre Dame, Brian Kelly, Ian Book, quieting their critics with a double overtime win over number one Clemson and Herbie. That's where we're going to start because it lived up to the billing. And Clemson's defense was beat up coming in, of course, playing without Trevor Lawrence. But what impressed me the most is the physicality that we saw from Notre Dame's front line offensively and what Ian Book did in that final drive in regulation to put his team in the position to force overtime. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Ian Book has had a career at Notre Dame that he can tell you better than anybody. Anytime you play a high profile position at a perennial power, you're going to be a hero. The next day, you're going to be a goat. And he's dealt with that. He's lived that and from his own fan base. And yet here he goes, you know, gives Notre Dame one of their biggest wins that they've had in decades. I thought, you know, his scrambling ability against that kind of defense would be a key, which it was. I thought his decision making was on point. The fact he didn't throw an interception, I think, obviously was big. Clemson turned it over three times. Notre Dame only once. They were plus two there. And as you know, in big games, that's always big. The line of scrimmage, I mean, Notre Dame, give them credit. Those guys coming in at 138 starts collectively, career starts collectively across the front. They set the tone early, too, with a nice big run and got on the board, jumped up. And I don't know, I think because of the way the game started, I don't know about how you felt watching. I felt it was watching Clemson very uncharacteristically playing. I don't want to say they were panicking, but it's weird to see them they're usually dictating things in a game, dictating tempo, dictating momentum. And the other team is kind of reacting to Clemson. I felt even though Clemson worked themselves back into the game, I really felt for a big percentage of the game that Notre Dame, from that opening touchdown drive, they were dictating things and Clemson was reacting to them. And then you throw in the injuries, and I don't think I love Dabo when he loses because he's not like, well, heck, what do you expect? Tyler Davis didn't play. James Scalzi didn't play. Mike Jones didn't play. I mean, we had all our leaders out and our best players out. And they should win. No. You get the opposite of that. Congratulations to Brian Kelly. Congratulations, Notre Dame. They deserve to win. They play great, and that's exactly how it should be when a coach loses a game. So congrats to Notre Dame. Great win. They've taken a lot of ribbing over the years. You know, they get on that big stage against Alabama in the national championship, but boom, game's over after two series. They get on that big stage in the semifinal against Clemson, boom, game's over. And they don't just lose. They almost embarrass themselves. So this was they're tired. This team played like they're tired of being made fun of or being told they can't win big games. They wanted to prove a point. And I thought they were challenged. Clemson fought all the way back. And then Notre Dame gets it to OT. And it went back and forth, and at the end, Notre Dame's defense in overtime makes a few plays to win it. But awesome! It creates some excitement. It's Clemson dropped to four, Notre Dame to me up at two, and if they keep winning, what a rematch that could be in the ACC championship game in like a month or so.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing about this, and I think that. After we saw that, it feels like maybe potentially we could be watching a trilogy here this season. It's 2020, and we could have two teams from the SEC, two teams from the ACC. Who knows in the playoff mix? But for me, it sets up a lot of conversation leading into next month. It's not the eye roll. Oh, here we go again with Notre Dame, right? Like they haven't beaten anybody. A kind of conversation that we've kind of found ourselves in, even though they've had an incredible schedule through the years as an independent. The other thing, too, is the dynamic playmakers that we saw at Notre Dame. And that's the one thing that I think has been the biggest knock is do they have any dynamic playmakers? We're seeing that on defense. And Kyren Williams, like you mentioned, out the gate, they set the tone and said, regardless of what's going to happen, we're going to win with our style. And that's with the big guys in front of us. And we're going to run the ball. And I just – I really was impressed with how they handled the adversity when Clemson came back. Because right, you know, a week ago, you know, once DJ got settled there in that BC game, they came back and said, we're going to win the way we want. Once Clemson tied it up at 23 apiece, I felt like now we're going to learn something about Notre Dame and how they're going to handle the adversity, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's what makes this win that much more impressive. You know, they took Clemson's best shot, you know, the team that they had to put on the field that night, and they were able to find a way to get it done. I'm really happy, as you said earlier, for Ian Book, that offensive line kind of setting the tone. Who would have ever thought that Travis Etienne would have 18 carries and 28 yards, 0.6 per carry? I mean, that's if Clemson can't run the ball. And I thought, and I think David would agree with this, David Pollack would agree with this, that we might see a better opportunity for DJ to run the football. Quarterbacks for Clemson in these bigger games typically run 10 to 15 times and get, you know, over 50 yards rushing. But he was not a factor at all in the running game. Notre Dame's defense really flying around. Owusu, I thought, had a great game, as you'd expect him to have. And the takeaway moving forward is Notre Dame, stay healthy, kind of keep doing what you're doing. And Clemson, they got to get healthy. They need James Kousy back. And I think Jake Venable's a great player, but it's more the leadership and the experience that you lose. But man, oh man. We've been so spoiled over the years watching Clemson rush the quarterback, and they're having a problem getting home. They're really having a problem getting to the quarterback consistently. And when they can't, like any defense, when you can't get to the quarterback, you get exposed on the back end. And as they get into the rest of their season, they're going to have to come up with ways. And Brent Venables is as good as there is on that side of the ball. He's going to have to come up with ways once they get healthy on trying to dial up pressure and be able to make quarterbacks uncomfortable. They got to affect the quarterback the rest of the way. And they did not do a very good job of that. And then when they did, Ian Book stepped away from it and then shook a guy or two and picked up valuable yards. So that's an area that they're going to have to clean up before they get ready if they play Notre Dame again.
And for Notre Dame, we're going to hold our breath too, considering the celebration from the student body afterwards. First field storming we've seen in all of college football because we're still in this pandemic, and we're going to hold our breath because that program's been through a lot when it comes to COVID. And just moving forward, fingers crossed on testing results as well. Moving later in the week, we will hear, of course, more information with Wisconsin and their status. And that's the way of the world that we're in. We do not see field storming. And I understand the kids or the young men and women were, you know, emotional because that a game like that in Notre Dame Stadium is pretty incredible. The vibe felt like it went from 10,000 to 100,000 people in the middle of the field after the game. But next up for them, if everything plays out, they've got BC on the road. And I've got the game circled the day after Thanksgiving against North Carolina on the road. And that it feels like North Carolina can score points. And with that offense against that Notre Dame defense, we will learn a lot more about this Notre Dame team before the potential rematch against against Clemson in the ACC championship game.
Yeah, not only on the road, those teams are more than capable of competing. Not only that, and the fact that they're on the road, don't forget the game at the end of the year that was postponed earlier, that they play Wake on the road. And Wake, since starting 0-2, they got the game postponed against Notre Dame. They've reeled off four straight wins. And I'm not saying they did beat Virginia Tech. And I'm not saying they're blowing people out that are really, really good. But the fact that all of a sudden they've got a little bit of confidence themselves, they are going to beat somebody before it's all said and done. I don't know who it's going to be, but somebody's going to go against Wake and think, we got Wake this week, and they're going to lose. So we'll see. No, you're right. Notre Dame has a long way to go before we start celebrating a potential rematch in the ACC championship. BC this week, I mean, everyone's going to pull out the videotape, you know, 1993 after Notre Dame that Florida State at home, and then they went on the road and had to deal with actually was at home against Boston College, last second field goal. And everyone's going to pull that video clip out this week to remind Notre Dame. But I think, you know, you got former BC quarterback or former Notre Dame quarterback throwing it around and doing great things now for BC. And and Jurkovic and playing with confidence. He'll be fired up to play against his former team. So a lot to that game for sure.
Look at you producing already a game day segment, because you know that they're going to do a flashback, right? And play in that BC game and how that played out in 1993.
There's
some good memories. You know, when I say that, good memories, because that's when Notre Dame was such a power, and Florida State, and it's good to have Notre Dame relevant here in this conversation. I think for the state of the game, and keep an eye on Michael Mayer. Gosh, I don't need to say it. If you watch the game, he just, the baby Gronk freshman, you just watch him and you're like, that kid's going to be so ridiculously good. And he would be in the every single conversation. If we were talking about tight ends outside of Kyle Pitts, he's just really fun to watch size wise. Your game was interesting, and you guys were on the call, Oregon and Stanford. And I felt terrible for the kicker, and you guys were talking about it during the broadcast, and Stanford trying to figure out their quarterback situation. You know, it was an interesting game because we could learn a little bit about Tyler Shuck and where this Oregon team would be, especially with losing some of the players, opting out. What were your initial thoughts on what you saw from Oregon, as well as, you know, the Pac-12 opening up in the earlier game with USC, with that comeback in the final 3 minutes against Arizona State?
Well, I know guys like Pollock have just written the Pac-12 off before they even started a game. I have not. You know, I enjoy the conference. I know they've been down a little bit, but I think Oregon, if you haven't seen them play, and I know most people were watching the Notre Dame-Clemson game, if you haven't seen Oregon play, they are now, keep in mind, they lost five offensive linemen who all played a lot like Notre Dame's offensive line this year. A lot of them were 3 and 4 year starters. So they lost a lot of experience up front. You lost Justin Herbert, who's tearing it up now with the Chargers. They had a lot of opt outs. Guys decided when the Pac-12 was kind of hemming and hawing, we're not going to play. A lot of guys opted out, including Sewell, their left tackle, who was the best left tackle in football. So I think a lot of people just thought they're in a rebuilding mode. I don't know if people really understand Oregon has reached a point with Mario Cristobal as their leader. They don't rebuild. They recruited so well, and they developed these players so well. They reload. They've reached that level of a program where they can afford to lose people. They lost all five offensive linemen, and I think they were graded out by PFF as the top O-line in the entire country. So it's a tribute to Mario Cristobal as a former offensive lineman and kind of a guru at that spot. His new line coach, who's a good buddy of his, and these players. So I think people are going to enjoy watching the new quarterback, who's fun to watch, Tyler Shuck. He's running Joe Moorhead's offense. Of course, he's at Mississippi State the last couple of years, but before that was Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley at Penn State as the offensive coordinator for James Franklin. So he's out at Eugene now. They are not a team you want to sleep on. Stanford, by the way, is much better. They had a tough year ago. But you're right, the field goal kickers missing kicks and possessions that should have been at least field goals, if not touchdowns, but they couldn't finish off drives. So Oregon ended up pulling away, but the game felt a lot closer than the score at 35-14. But let's see what happens with Oregon. I'm not saying they're going to run the table at all, but I do think people need to give them and USC and others out there at least a chance to play until we kind of know who they are. The USC Arizona State game was fascinating. Arizona State really controlled most of that game until, you know, the latter part of it. Now, I mean, SC was putting up numbers. They're throwing the ball and even running the ball pretty well, but turnovers hurt them. And until late in that game, it looked like, man, Arizona State's going to win this because of those turnovers. And then SC gets the touchdown, the onside kick, and then the go-ahead score late, and then the defensive stop, and somehow you look up and they won the game, you know, so you got to give them credit. But that was a game that Herm, I'm sure, would love to have gotten out of the Coliseum with a win. But let's watch the Pac-12 for a couple of weeks before we kind of just say, wow, they don't play enough games. They don't count. No, they count for sure. And I'm enjoying watching them.
I agree. I totally agree. And Keaton Slovis already slung it around, I think, 55 times. and now they're trying to figure out their running back situation. But Slovis just looked like, I'm picking up where I left off. There was no break for me, and let's just go. ton of credit because they converted on 2 fourth downs on those 2 touchdowns, right? You know, in those final 3 minutes. One of them was a penalty, but it was still 4th and long. And the second one was a 4th and 9. So for them to have the fortitude in the final 3 minutes to not give up, what a big win for Clay Helton. Because, again, on this short season, and you can't afford to mess up here, especially out the gate, losing a game just like that at 9 a.m. local time. And you've got to find a way to figure it out. And ton of credit to Clay Helton and Keaton Slovis and this USC team to get the W and move forward here. Let's go to the SEC because, you know, the biggest game when you talk about playoff conversation was in Jacksonville, an elimination game for Georgia or Florida. And the offense with Kyle Trask, we've discussed this on the podcast that, okay, that defense championship moniker, that's out the door nowadays, especially in a season like this. Can you put up points? And I was blown away that Georgia took a 14-0 lead and how Kyle Trask responded against that defense on every single possession. Just a great job. And again, Georgia was beat up. We understand defensively. They were losing some key guys. But Trask was outstanding. 474, 5 straight games with at least 4 touchdowns. Well, they got Arkansas next week. Let's just talk about what you saw and how big of a win this is for Dan Mullen moving forward.
Enormous. I mean, I thought Georgia's defense, obviously, I didn't think they'd be depleted the way they were coming in, and then especially throughout the game. But that, I don't know if it would have mattered that much. You know, I thought when Florida dug themselves a hole, I've never seen Kyle Trask play with emotion in the 2 years we've watched him be a quarterback. He's been more of a kind of stoic figure, you know, in his personality. But there were some touchdowns that were happening and cameras going to his emotion on the sideline. And I kind of like to see it in a rivalry game. You know, he was really feeling it after the Grimes touchdown, and he should. I mean, think about his numbers he had at halftime. I mean, that was something you just never see against any defense, let alone against the Georgia defense. And, you know, I think they had a ton of confidence. What was it, like 38-21 at halftime? Mm-hmm. And I think Georgia stopped them, you know, for a possession. And so they were feeling it, feeling good. Dan Mullen deserves a lot of credit. You know, he hadn't beaten Kirby Smart as a head coach at Florida. And so this was not only big for 2020 and getting into the driver's seat in the SEC East and trying to get to Atlanta and a chance to play Alabama and maybe a shot to get to a playoff, but it was also big for their program and recruiting and just showing people that think about a few weeks ago, Florida took a lot of criticism. They lost to A&M. Then they had the issues with COVID. A lot of people wondered if they were kind of a forgotten brand. And, you know, after that, they've really looked like a different team coming off of the A&M loss and then, you know, having to postpone the LSU game. They blew Missouri out, who was kind of a trendy team at that time. And then what they did to Georgia, that's why, you know, in my rankings right now, I moved Florida all the way up to 5 ahead of A&M, even though A&M beat them. I think their performance caught everybody's eye with the way they played. And now they get ready. You know, that I wouldn't take this game lightly after an emotional win against Georgia. Now you got Sam Pittman, who understand tested positive for COVID. We wish him all the best and his team all the best. But assuming they're able to play that game, they better not be celebrating what happened in Jacksonville, because Arkansas is playing pretty good team football. So that could be an interesting game. But again, we'll keep an eye on what's going on with Arkansas amidst the COVID to the head coach.
Yeah, Barry Odom will take over this week. So we hope Sam, has a full recovery. And yeah, I've mentioned this before. I'll keep on saying it. When you live with a Gator, you hear it all the time. Sunday morning, I was congratulating my wife, but I was just like, you just watch it, though. Do not sleep on 3-3 Arkansas, because there's a quarterback on that other side. And that's Felipe Franks, who's doing everything right in this offense and making plays. And if Franks doesn't get hurt last year, we don't see Kyle Trask, or who knows what we're going to see from Kyle Trask, because he was behind him on the depth chart. So Kyle Pitts is questionable after taking that nasty hit by Lewis Cine in the game. We hope he's going to be okay. So this is one of those games. And Mullen afterwards was like, it felt like he was like, I'm not taking a victory lap here because I'm fully aware of who we have next. And we'll see how this Arkansas team comes out. But Felipe's got to calm his emotions down, right, in a game like this, because you know more than anybody on the field, he wants to knock off the Gators after what happened last year.
And, I'm glad you said that about his emotions, because one of my criticisms of his when he was the Florida quarterback was I felt like he was very talented, but he played almost too emotional, almost immature, you know, for a quarterback. You know, when they played opened up last year with Miami of Florida, he's just chirping to the fans and just doing stuff you normally don't see a quarterback doing. Usually they block out the fans and they're on the phone with the offensive coordinator or they're making adjustments. And to his credit, a year later, he looks like a different guy. You know, he's in a system and he's playing and he's having fun and he's focused and he's mature. And I hope he's able to stay there as he gets ready, as you said, against his former team. But you look at the rest of their Florida schedule after Arkansas, they go to Vandy, they got Kentucky at home, they go to Knoxville, and they finish up with LSU. I would make an argument that in their five remaining games, that this week is their toughest game that they have to play. I'm not saying those other ones won't be competitive. I'm just saying because of the emotion of the win against Georgia and because of the way Arkansas is playing, I think this could be their toughest roadblock between now and getting to the end of the year where, you know, they end up losing just the one game to Texas A&M by 3 points.
Arkansas could be such an intriguing team the rest of the way. They've got Alabama at the end of the season as well. And that game is an interesting scenario because Alabama's coming off the Auburn game. That's off the Iron Bowl, and then they have to deal with Arkansas. So you come off the emotions of a game like that, and then you have to close out against Pittman's crew before thinking about big picture, and that is the conversation of the playoff in the SEC championship game. How do you view you know, the number one team in the land? It's just it feels like 2020 is chaos, and the one thing we can count on is Alabama will find a way to get to the number one spot in the nation.
Yeah. You know, I think we all agree right now what they're doing is not only impressive, it's just, I don't know if some fans understand how hard it is to be that team year in and year out every year. And Clemson deals with that weight. I think Ohio State deals with that weight. And Alabama kind of started it with Nick Saban. And more than anything, I just admire the consistency from Coach Saban and his teams. You know, you go back to basically 2008, where they didn't quite get it done in the SEC championship until they came back in 09 and got Tebow that year. But from 08, they were a pretty darn good team. 08 all the way to 2020, the Alabama team, the UC take the field, that's kind of who they've been for the last 12 or 13 years. Now, they may not always climb the mountain and make it to the national title or win the national title, but they're always that's you watch them play and you go, that's Alabama. And this team, think about, they lost Tagovailoa. They lost a lot of other great players. And here they are with new quarterback. Got an injury to Waddle. They just kind of, okay, hey, we hope Waddle's going to be okay and he feels better. But the season's got to go on and the year's got to go on. And they just continue to put points up and continue to show that they can attack in different ways. At LSU, it's not, you know, what we've grown to accustom. Normally, this is one of those games everybody circles, and it's like the game, not just in the SEC, but the whole country can't wait for Alabama and LSU. That's not going to be the case this year. I think Alabama will blow LSU out in every phase, every way imaginable. And, you know, for Bama, it's like always, it's more about against perfection. It's not against who we playing this week, LSU, Kentucky, Auburn, Arkansas. It's more about themselves and just trying to keep raising the bar. And I think also offensively, continuing to learn how to play without Jalen Waddle, not just this week, but looking at their big picture goals of winning the SEC and a national title, they're going to have to continue to grow and continue to be versatile enough without that explosiveness that they had from 17.
It's now time for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And Herbie, we can now do it. We can now include all Power 5 conferences in this conversation when we talk about the playoff.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was great to see most of the Pac-12 back anyway this past weekend. But every week we're going to be taking a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor. The All-State Playoff Predictor projects the top team's chances of making the college football playoff. I'll be pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And, you know, the Clemson-Notre Dame game seemed to be the biggest story over the weekend. And of course, Clemson losing, Notre Dame with a historic win there in South Bend. They move up. For me, I would have Alabama at one. I'd move Notre Dame after a win like that. And I know Clemson had some injuries, but it's still facts are facts. Notre Dame deserves credit. I'd move Notre Dame to two. I'd have Ohio State at three. I'd move Clemson to four. And after that, personally, I'd be looking at teams like Texas A&M and Florida and University of Cincinnati, BYU as those next teams. And I think Florida, and I know they lost to A&M, but I'd give Florida an edge just because of how good they're playing right now, kind of the direction they're trending, despite that loss at Kyle Field. I know some people will be against that logic because they lost to them head-to-head. By the way, it'll work itself out anyway if they both keep winning games. A&M would eventually go ahead of Florida. But I would have Florida ahead, and also I would have BYU ahead of Texas A&M right now. So those would be my teams, but it's starting to kind of, it's getting a little intriguing and argumentative at this point in the season.
That's all we could ask for, right? When we're having these debates, that means we've got good storylines, and it's not just a clear-cut thing like we had that vibe where it was just three teams and who's the fourth. When you look at the All-State Playoff Predictor right now, Alabama, the highest chance to make the playoff at 90%. To win the title, how about that, 39%. Ohio State is second, followed by Notre Dame, and then Clemson. And then that fifth team on this Playoff Predictor has Wisconsin. Just one game in the books. We'll see how this plays out against Michigan. And if they could play this coming weekend, they're at 40%. And then you got Oregon there in that sixth spot, followed by BYU, Florida, Cincinnati, and USC. Let's go to the Big Ten here and a handful of storylines. But it begins and ends with Justin Fields and this ridiculous stat. So far this season, he's got 11 incompletions and 11 touchdowns. It's not fair. I don't care who you're playing. It's not fair what we're seeing from him, completing nearly 87% of his passes. There was one topic that was broached last week by our boy Pollock, and we'll talk to him about this at another time, but I want to get your thoughts because it was heavily discussed on Get Up and when he brought it up. And he made this conversation about the way Justin Fields is playing, it's not a knock on Trevor Lawrence, but that the gap that we've talked about with Trevor Lawrence and everybody else is not there when you have Justin Fields in the conversation. And that Justin Fields, by the end of the season, could be discussed as 1 and 1A when it comes to the draft. How do you view these two type of talents and what we're seeing with Justin Fields so far this season heading into, you know, the heart of their schedule?
Well, see, I felt that way since last year. I've never really changed off of that. If you watched the semifinal last year between Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, you didn't walk out of that game saying, wow, what a significant gap between, they played each other. What mm-hmm. a significant gap between Lawrence and Fields. You know, he's in a different galaxy. I didn't feel that. I don't think anybody watching the game felt that. Now, Trevor came into this year, and Trevor's raised his game to another level. God bless him for it. He's through COVID and restrictions and everything else. You can tell he's at a different level of comfort within his offensive structure, within reading coverages, working through his progressions and being able to eventually find that open receiver. And I feel like if he has any edge, and that won't show up at a combine workout, Kevin, that won't show up at, you know, when they have their personal workouts and you want to compare them. I'm talking about when you turn on game film The area that I think Justin Fields is still growing, and this is through game reps, you know, Trevor Lawrence has an entire year on him as far as game reps in college. And it shows if you really break down the film play by play. Justin Fields is still growing in his ability to come go from A to B to C. He had a tendency last year through all the success to look at A, and if that wasn't there, he's so athletic and so gifted, his eyes would have a tendency to go down and he would go into create mode and it would work for him. And if you watch him this year, he still does that at times, but he's doing a better job when they give him protection of going A, oh, not there, reshuffle feet, B, C, check down or take off. That's the that those are going to be what the NFL, that's what they're going to break down. And depending on who the team is and what they want, what kind of offensive style they run. But I think it's that close, you know, and Trevor has the advantage of playing in his third year as a starter, whereas Justin's only in his second. But I don't think that's a revelation of any kind. Maybe there are a lot of analysts that think it's Trevor and then everybody else. But I've always felt it's just that Justin Fields is sitting around waiting for the Big Ten to start while Trevor Lawrence was creating a lot of momentum and energy. But I think most people who really watch these guys play always, at least I've always felt, there was Trevor and Justin, and then I think there was a drop after that. But and obviously Justin's not hurting himself at all with the three games that he's played. Like you said, 11 incompletions, making really good decisions. He's leaned out. He's quicker. He's processing things better. So we'll see where their seasons end up. But I'm with who'd you say? David said that?
David said it. And I think that was to the general public, because I think the general public has this feeling that it's Trevor Lawrence who's the slam dunk number one pick. And that's been the most discussed thing when it comes to this 2021 draft for the last 2 years.
But
the way the game has changed, the way things are adapting, and what Justin Fields is doing when it comes to, I think you made a great point that the experience, the game experience, you are seeing him take that leap here where he just looks relaxed. He looks like there's no panic button at any point when he's in the pocket. He will make the right decision, right?
Well, it's funny how guys come out in the same year and you have to nitpick and, you know, dice and all that. But if I'm a franchise and you're talking about the personality of the quarterback and the energy that he brings in to a franchise and how he could impact everybody around him, I honestly don't know if you can find two better guys than these two guys. Their competitive fire, which I love. I love a quarterback that hates to lose in anything, golf, ping pong, you name it. He's mad if he loses. Both these guys have that kind of energy. And I think, and then on top of that, they're really likable. So I think whoever gets these guys, it's, and I said this earlier about Trevor, but it's true about Justin. They kind of check every box, and wherever they go, man, we're going to be talking about them and excited about the direction of that franchise that they go to.
Herbie, what's the bigger surprise after three games in this conference? That Penn State's 0-3, or how Michigan has looked to drop to 1-2?
I would say Michigan dropping to 1-2. I was one. I typically defend Jim Harbaugh and Michigan. I did after the Michigan State loss. I thought, hey, you know what? It's not a great thing. But they're going to regroup and get ready and show up inspired and play their tails off against Indiana. And and we wondered, Tom Allen has his team going in one direction. Michigan feels like they're going in another. And, well, Michigan's more talented. They should prevail. And here comes Tom Allen, you know, with a team that was from the word go, believing. They weren't hoping. Teams aren't playing Michigan and hoping that they can beat them. Indiana looked like they believed they were a better team. And looking at Michigan right now, I see a couple things. I see a pass rush that typically their philosophy is we're going to get to the quarterback with a variety of different looks and pressures before you beat us in man coverage. And it's worked for Don Brown so many times. And right now, they're not getting to the quarterback. And when they don't get to the quarterback, and they're leaving these corners on islands and they're getting exposed. I mean, it's just, it's film. Look at the film. 4 and 22, a lot of times are out there on islands and guys are beating them. And when you give the quarterback time, that's a tough thing for these corners to live on those islands for 2.5, 3, 4 seconds. And so those that combination of lack of a consistent pass rush and struggling in man coverage is really hurting this defense. I don't, when I watch them play, if I close my eyes and think about great Michigan defenses, you know, Jabril Peppers used to just, there was a personality to him that rubbed off on that defense. Michael McCray, they've always had players that had personalities that impacted their defense that allowed them to play with some fire. If you watched in these last couple weeks, man, they haven't had that. And so you got that concern. And then on offense, as excited as we were about Joe Milton, he seems like he has right now one pass going for him, and that's a fastball. You know, whether it's a skinny post or a deep ball or a short throw, he's throwing a really hard ball. And, you know, if you look at their stats over the last couple of weeks and think about, here's a team that should have a good running game. They weren't able to run the ball very well against Michigan State. And then if you watched them in the game against Indiana, you know, they ended up running the ball for 13 yards. And I know they got themselves in a hole and they had to throw, but I don't know. This is not the balance that I envisioned this Michigan offense having. They did against Minnesota, but they have not had that these last couple of weeks. And now you got Wisconsin. Assuming we'll find out later in the week, assuming Wisconsin's okay and able to go after missing a few weeks with COVID issues with their testing, with the staff and players, it sounds like Wisconsin's a go for now. And now Michigan has to face Wisconsin, you know, at home. That's a Saturday night ABC game. So to answer your question, I'm shocked after watching them play in their opener against Minnesota that they're not only 1-2, but how it feels with them sitting there at 1-2 and a lot of questions, and they got to find answers in a hurry.
Herbie, and the one thing that, you know, their struggles on defense, we see teams that we're going to throw the ball. We know you can't stop us. I can't believe that this team cannot run the football as well. They have a ton of talent in that backfield. They can't, like, when you look at the numbers, and I think the final tally was less than 20 yards total, and if you include the sacks and all. But, like, and you can't help that quarterback if you can't establish the run anywhere. And this goes to what, you know, where is this system with Josh Gattis as they're trying to develop talent? Tom Allen's done such a good job at Indiana in saying, we know who we are, but we are going to develop the talent that we bring in year two, year three, and year four. Now that's what you're seeing, right? Now, I haven't seen that type of development where you're winning the recruiting day, right, in February or now in December. Where are you developing that talent to be the next level good? That Ohio State's done a great job in, and the Indiana's done a great job in the last couple of years under Tom Allen. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at Indiana, real quick on Indiana, you bring up a great point about what Tom Allen's done in recruiting. They're not always like, you're going to watch the recruiting shows in February. You look at the classes. Indiana's not always going to rank up, you know, up in the top 25. But when you watch them play, man, he's done a good job of building a program, you know, block by block. And now all of a sudden you have a team that's not just, well, they have one receiver. They have one running back. They have one guy in the secondary. They have one D lineman. Like when you watch Indiana play, like I said, when I watched them against Michigan, if they switched uniforms, it wouldn't have been much of a difference. You wouldn't have looked at them and said, you know, what's going on with Indiana? You know, I mean, they got players, man. They have recruited well. And you said more importantly, developed well, where they now have a program. And I think they have a newfound confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, you Penn State win. You can argue all you want of whether or not Penix got to the corner or not. They won the game and it carried over into their Rutgers game. It carried over. Like I said, they're not hoping, man, we're still in this game, guys. It's the fourth quarter. No. They've been like that in the past. They're going to win. And now they got Michigan State. I mean, there's a really strong chance. This team is 4-0. going to Columbus next week on the 21st and feeling good about their chances even in that game. So it's fun to watch teams like that, right? It's fun to watch teams who, by the way, love their coach. Every time you see something on social media, you can tell it's genuine, you know, that God bless him for finding a way to still get players to want to play for each other and to play for their coach. You know, it's kind of a throwback way of doing it, but it's very effective. But Michigan's got to figure things out. We can nitpick here about they're not developing players. You know, they've done a pretty good job in that area in the past, but right now, I think it's a combination of they're trying to find their identity on offense. They cannot control the line of scrimmage and run the ball. It's putting everything on Milton in the passing game where they get into predictable play calling. And then on defense, like I said, they're not rushing the quarterback, and it's putting a lot on that secondary to hold up in man-to-man coverage, and they're losing. So that's where they are as they get ready for Wisconsin, and we'll see what happens Saturday night.
Let's give some love here, and Taylor did not slip me, some money here to mention them here on the podcast, but Mike Locksley and Maryland and the development of Talia Tagovailoa the last couple weeks. How they went into Happy Valley, and I understand Penn State's dealing with a lot, but Maryland came into that game and just said, we are going to dictate everything, and we're going to maximize the Tagovailoa's ability to move the ball down the field. That is with his legs, and then make some good decisions. And that's a credit to Mike Locksley and what we're seeing so far at Maryland, and turning around after the slow start in the opener.
I'm blown away by Maryland and Rutgers have been a punchline since they entered the Big Ten. Nobody gives them any respect. And now they open up the season, the first game of the year after all these teams, these players have been through. And like you said, they don't just lose to Northwestern. They get blown out. Tagovailoa has three interceptions. They can't run the ball, that well. Northwestern was running it and throwing it. They blew him out 43-3. And you're thinking, man, poor Locks. It can be a long year for my guy. And then they back it up with, that was an improbable win, but they found a way to win. I think that was on a Friday night against Minnesota. And then Maryland goes to Happy Valley and wins 35-19. And like you said, right now, Mike Locksley's drawing up really good plays. Tagovailoa is in sync with him, feeling good the last couple weeks, throwing the football and not turning it over. They've got some backs that are running to give them some balance. This Rakeem Jarrett ended up going, I think he had five receptions for 144 yards and a couple scores. So fun again, another one of those teams. It's kind of fun to see them get it going and see this confidence and these smiles on teams that are typically frustrated and angry after playing teams like Penn State, Michigan. So on one hand, we could look at it like, what the heck's going on with Michigan? What the heck's going on with Penn State? Or on the other hand, you can say, how about Mike Locksley in Maryland? And how about Tom Allen in Indiana?
Yeah, and what Northwestern's doing at a 3-0 start, like some really good storylines in the Big Ten. Another good storyline, I'm not sure if you saw it, like the way that Liberty Virginia Tech game played out, it was absolute mayhem. And Justin Fuentes is afterwards saying he will never get over calling that timeout on the 59-yard kick to end the game that looked like it was a block that returned for a touchdown. And then it's incredible, the storyline that Liberty now 17-point dogs. They get the win, 2-0 in the ACC, 7-0 on the season. And Hugh Freeze, Liberty, enjoy this, because Hugh Freeze is going to be coaching somewhere else. He's going to be at a Power 5 next year. And the guy knows what he's doing when it comes to play calling. It's pretty incredible that the Flames are in this situation right now.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. First of all, I just like to give Hugh Freeze a ton of credit for what he's done, not just at Liberty, but for how he's handled a really tough set of circumstances. He kind of owned it, just didn't run and hide. He's taken his lumps. People have been critical. People have made fun of him. And he's just been quiet. He hasn't really responded, hadn't tried to defend himself. He's just gone out and just tried to get this program to win some games. And here he is a few years in, and he's got him up in the top 25 and coming off a win at Lane Stadium. Whoever would have thought that Liberty would be able to do that? So I, not just that they won the game, but anybody who knows Hugh Freeze knows that he made some mistakes and knows that that's called life. He's learned from those mistakes, and he's moving in a much better direction. And I wish him and his wife and kids all the best. And like you said, I love that he's doing what he's doing at Liberty. But on a personal note, I'd love to see him back in the SEC as a head coach or somewhere else as a head coach and get an opportunity to win big games, because he's a lot of fun. As you said, as a play caller, when he runs a program, you know, he gets him to win. It's just a reality of where he's been. So his quarterback, Malik Willis, did a really good job in this game this past weekend. Accounted, I think, for 4 touchdowns. He had 3 through the air, went over 100 yards on the ground. They're a tough offense to defend, just like Bo Wallace and Ole Miss used to be, or Chad Kelly. You know, I mean, he gets quarterbacks to make plays. Doesn't have the guns defensively. That's what I think. Everyone thought he may score 20 or 30, but he's probably going to give up 50 or 60. So give his defense enough credit for playing well enough to win the game. And you're right. It looked like Virginia Tech may be able to escape. Who would ever think that calling a timeout like that to ice a kicker would backfire? But it did, and the win. So
the emotional swing, and that's why we love. That's why we love Saturdays. Like Saturday felt like that's the everything was back to normal with everything we saw from the beginning of the Pac-12 returning to how that played out in Blacksburg to what we saw in South Bend. And then let's add to this. And I know we talked about it last Monday, but we gave Cincinnati some love. BYU, just watch out, because you're probably looking at the third best quarterback in college football. When I say third, I'm talking about draft perspective with Trevor and Justin and Zach Wilson, because BYU really impressed me on Friday night. And we'll close the podcast on your thoughts on what do you think about BYU when it comes to the playoff conversation?
Well, you know how I've been on BYU since week one. I mean, yes. I loved them. Lucky enough to call their game against Navy and left that game thinking, wow, Zach Wilson's a real deal. And this team's going to be fun to keep an eye on. You know, even if they're not going to have marquee opponents, I just was really fired up to see how they'd play. And all they've done is at this point, they're 8-0, and they've won by an average margin of 45-13. And they're physical. They're nasty. They're experienced. You know, last year, this team was riddled with injuries. And so a lot of guys that weren't ready to play last year played. And now those guys that had to step in and play, they're all back. And the guys that were injured are all back. So it's one thing to go through it. It's another thing to survive it. And now you got a veteran team with a quarterback that can sling it around. He's got tremendous skill in Romney and Milne that can catch the ball on the outside. They got a couple backs. An offensive line that's similar to what Notre Dame has. And I don't know, man, they're a team I would not want to play. We'll see. I mean, they're getting at this point with that Notre Dame win over Clemson, that kind of changes the narrative and where we are. If Clemson were to beat Notre Dame, if those two teams were to win out and Clemson got revenge and beat them in a close game, well, you could still make a pretty strong case for Notre Dame, even though they lost to Clemson in a bonus game. In an ACC championship, it's if they split, why would Notre Dame still hang around, hover potentially in the top 4? So we'll see. I mean, BYU is going to need a lot of help, but they are worthy of being talked about and being considered. And I love watching them every single time they take the field.
To your point, too, you know, seeing them early in the season against Navy, what's going to hurt them? They've got 8 games already in, right? What's going to hurt them? They have only one more game this month, and then they have a December 12th game. So they have 2 games left. They're going to be off the radar, right? They're going to be out of the conversation when it comes to just subjective talks about the playoff. And I think that could hurt them down the road if we're talking about teams, right? Because they're like, oh, yeah, don't forget about BYU, right? Because we're not seeing them top of mind. And that plays a role. Unfortunately, it plays a role when optics and narrative is shaped about teams that should be in the conversation. Or am I, Herbie, am I getting that right? Or am I thinking too much about this?
Oh, I think when you play games, no matter who you play, you're giving yourself a chance to remind the committee, most importantly, but also the narrative, the fans, the analysts that watch games. You're reminding people of how good Zach Wilson is, how good your team is. And, you know, here they are with just 2 weeks, two games to play. And I'm looking at my calendar. What do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks of football played, if you include the conference championships, and you're going to be playing 2 of those 6 weeks. That's not good, you know? And I don't think you ever notice BYU, they're anti like UCF as far as their the noise that comes out of Provo is not like, you better respect us. You don't hear anything from them. And I don't think they're going to get on a campaign about, we deserve to be in there. Look what we've done. You might hear that from a few of their fans, but I think they're just enjoying the ride. You know, I think they're really happy with the season that they're on and having and enjoying. And by the way, an All-American tight end, a 4-year starter, Matt Boschman, should be playing with these guys. And he got hurt going into the Navy game that week, a freak accident injury that kept him out, not just to that Navy game, but for the entire year. He's an NFL tight end, the top tight end in the country. And you imagine throwing him into this lineup. Mm-hmm. So I honestly think BYU is just loving life after the year that they had last year, and they're enjoying the attention, but they deserve it. Like I said, they may not get to the four, but as we debate teams and argue and throw things against the wall, and everyone argues with each other and gets mad at each other, make sure you keep bringing BYU up, because they should be in that discussion.
Good stuff there. And we will have plenty of time to talk about the Bearcats as the season continues and what Desmond Ritter is doing. Where are we going this week for game day?
Game day is going to a little place called Augusta National.
Yeah, I love it. I put that on a tee for you, because that's going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it, man. Going over there Thursday morning. We all got to take a COVID test on Thursday. And if everything comes out okay from the test, we'll be over there Friday. And, you know, doing some Sports Center things on Friday evening. And then Saturday we'll do game day in the morning. I don't know what the fellas are going to do, but as soon as game day's over, I'll get on a flight and head to Ann Arbor, and I'll be calling again, as you and I are taping this as of now. Wisconsin looks like I've read a release from Barry Alvarez, the AD, and Wisconsin as of now looks like they're playing. Things, as we all know, in 2020 can change in the blink of an eye, but as of now they're playing. So if they do play, we'll put Michigan and Wisconsin on a big stage to see what Michigan can do to try to turn things around. But Chris and I and Maria will be there Saturday night.
Fingers crossed. Let's hope we get that game in. We hope everybody's safe with the Wisconsin program, and enjoy it for all of us at Augusta, and safe travels after that to Ann Arbor.
Thanks, buddy. Have a great week.
Big thanks to Kirk Herbstreit, of course, and David Pollack will join us on Wednesday with his picks. It was not a good week for Pollack. Not a good week. Can't wait to discuss that. And, of course, Taylor Schwenk on the other side. And I think you're going to get a little bit more Maryland talk. Maybe a conversation of Talia Tungavailoa at the request of our boy Taylor. Asked Pollack to take a look at some video. And that maybe we might have a breakdown on the podcast on Wednesday. And of course, Taylor doing a great job coordinating this podcast and producing it for you guys. And once again, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, review. We love hearing back. The feedback is always welcome, whether you like it or not, or you've got a snarky comment. Pollack enjoys those when I read it to him. if you want more football, fingers are crossed with spikes going up throughout the country, just social distance, wear a mask, keep your fingers crossed as the season continues. Thank you.